passer. Ouais, c'est pas possible. Un artiste. Super. Encore un but sensationnel.
That's a brilliant bit of follow-up play by Mahé. Oh my goodness me, what a shot.
Sagosen. Sagosen setter det hen. Han setter den. Vi i semifinale.
Hola, buenos días. Radio España. Yes, you're listening to the Uninformed Handball Hour. The EHF Euro 2020 is finally in the books. Spain winning 22-20. And of course, this means that this is the last episode for this Euro. But the good news is, these episodes don't stop. They keep going all year round.
Forever and ever.
The second bit of good news is that we have a live studio audience.
Way!
Nanny in the house. Not my nanny. Actual woman called Nanny is in the house. She's not allowed to talk on the mic, but she'll sit there and smile. Okay, thank you, Nanny. So, guys, the Euros in the books, 22-20. Let's maybe start with the first half. Okay, so at halftime, Spain were up by one. Chris, what was your initial reaction to those first 30 minutes of handball?
It all changed in the 19th minute, didn't it? With those two substitutions in the timeout, because they were looking in a bit of danger. Then it was 10-7. To Croatia, and they brought on Jorge Maqueda at right back, and they brought in Gonzalo Perez de Vargas in goal instead of Corrales. And I know there's been a lot of switching between the two goalkeepers in the championship, but you know, Gonzalo Perez de Vargas was the man in form, and when it comes to the final, you go with the main man, and for this championship it has been Gonzalo. And because Alex Dushabayev was really nervous in the opening 15 minutes, they brought in Jorge Maqueda, who just doesn't give a darn.
Yeah.
He doesn't give a darn. And I think those two changes were the catalyst for Spain's turnaround.
Interesting what you say about Alex Dushabayev, because I was sitting right behind the bench, and just before the match starts, he's like, I don't have my mouthpiece. I forgot my mouthpiece. And then he has to go get some, the kit guy had to go into the dressing room, take his mouthpiece out, bring it back over, wet it up with some water. And then it was only after 5 minutes he got his mouthpiece. So that maybe played a bit of mind games with him. Do you know someone who plays with a mouthpiece all the time and then you don't have it in your mouth? It's kind of you feel a bit naked.
But it takes just small things at a final like that where it just throws you off. And I think a lot of players were nervous going into it. I think Lucas Zapacic, during the anthem.
I said it.
During the game, basically.
What was he like in the sauna?
And afterwards, he was absolutely distraught. I think, it was just the emotional ride, probably in his head, from the very start to the very end. And he didn't have that bad of a game. He scored 3 from 7, but it was a really tight game. So a lot of players had that kind of shooting percentage. And he made some crucial movements and goals in the second half, which kind of turned the tide again for Croatia. But going back to the first half, Croatia had Dubnyak and Karadžić on fire. It looked like everything was going swimmingly for them. And I was actually surprised that Spain... I still have the belief that Croatia aren't bottlers. And they didn't bottle this one.
Are not. But you did say... in the second half, that they're bottlers. You went back to old Alex.
No, I stick. I don't think they bottled it. Spain were the best team in this tournament. Yep. They had the best squad in this tournament. Every player played in that game. Goni scored a goal in the first half out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. 11 players scored for Spain. Yeah. And that's what they did for the whole tournament. And it showed, because in the last minute, it was Karadžić who played, 6-7 hours of handball, got the ball, and took 9 steps. Literally 9 steps. So this isn't exaggerating. He took 9 steps to turn over at 21-20 and basically end the game.
That's it. And you mentioned there every single player played for Spain, and they played properly as well. Goni, who was a defensive specialist, did score a goal. He had the lowest court time with 11 minutes. And that basically, you know, doubled that if you're talking about the length of time he was playing. Whereas Croatia only had 11 players who played
11 minutes or more. And that really showed, and you mentioned it to me, Alex, in the first half, Spain were just rotating. And they were playing the long game. When it came to the crunch time in the end, that really did pay off, exactly like you said. And that's what they did using their entire 16-man squad.
Sindrich played for how long was it exactly? 10 minutes maybe? Less? But I had footage of him after the last game when they...
5:28.
5 minutes, okay. And I had footage of him after the semi-final when they won, and he couldn't even run to celebrate. And I was thinking, there's no way he's going to be able to play. And then I saw him run around quite well, and then I thought, maybe he'll be able to do something, but then I think he doesn't have the fitness, but obviously his body's just all banged up.
Do you think he would have been the difference if he was fully fit?
They were a lot more banged up than Spain were, you know? I mean, you were talking to Karacic yesterday, Chris, and he was in a bad way yesterday. You know, he could barely walk. I had to go get extra physio done to make sure he's fit for the game today. It's always difficult to say, and I think Spain were probably had the best route to the final. They took it, and it paid dividends in the end. And the fact that they just rotated and had this massive squad, as you said on the walk over here, the fact that they could change seven players, and those seven players come on and they play even better, is just you couldn't keep up with that. If this ever went to extra time, which it could have, I mean, if things went slightly differently for Croatia, the extra time would have been Spain's thing totally. I mean, there was no way Croatia would have been able to play another 20 minutes of handball.
Is there anything else Croatia could have done?
If they have to resort to playing Horvat at right back, I think they tried everything. there's not much more you can do. It just comes down to their two guys in this case. Mm-hmm. Who, and it was funny because Spain changed their defence. They started with a 3-2-1 and Duvnjak and Karacic had a great time. But then when they let Duvnjak do Duvnjak's thing, mm-hmm, of standing at 8-7 meters, it didn't really work for Croatia.
Well, that's funny because that's what Gonzalo Perez de Vargas said to me in the post-match interview, that that they changed a few things. They also went back to the 6-0 defense and they gave the space that you would imagine Duvnjak likes, but they have a very, very good central block. And that played a big role as well. And you spoke to Verón Morris after the game, who is the heart of that central defense. And shall we listen into what he had to say?
Congratulations, huge win. What for you was the key moment in the game that really drove you to the end?
The key moment was when Alex scored a game. at that point, we knew we had it. I think we were defending really, really good the whole tournament, and that was really, really important for us. Goalkeepers were extraordinary, and we did a great job. I think all the team was playing awesome. So I can talk about a key moment. I mean, the mentality was good all the time. We were pushing all the time, so that's the thing.
And throughout the tournament, the team rotated a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of players contributed, not only today, but throughout the whole tournament. Was that a big key for you?
Yeah, the thing that Jordi was preparing, was talking about all the time, that we need to play all players. And that's not only good because we play less minutes, so we're fresher. Everyone is in the game, everyone feels important for the team, and that's also very important because after everyone plays better.
And so a lot of medals for you, a lot of wins, but does defending this European Championship feel a little bit special?
Of course. It's a back-to-back. I don't know how many teams in the history have done that, and we did it. And it's incredible. Wow, it's our fifth semi-final in a row for European Championship. 4 medals, it's incredible. I can be more happy and more proud of my team.
And do you bring this momentum now into the Olympics? Is that going to be a big focus?
Yes, we still need to go the whole season with our teams now, but obviously we're all looking forward to Tokyo.
And for you personally, is this going to be more generations of Vera Marsh winning medals? Or?
No, I think it's going to be my... This has been my last European Championship, nearly for sure. And I think I'm going to finish with my the national team in Tokyo. So I think it's been already a long and good ride, so I think it's enough.
And lastly, you're going to celebrate today, but are we expecting another video from you guys?
I don't know. What are we going to do now? Just celebrate with our families and have fun.
Congratulations and have a good night.
So there we have Bjørn Morris, who has confirmed to Alex that he will retire from international handball after the Olympics. And I think it's not really a surprise to a lot of people out there when you look at the average age of that Spanish squad. I think it's up on 31 years of age, which is quite old.
I think they actually, Bjørn also spoke about having Olympics as a big goal. And I think a lot of them want that kind of, let's ride out into the sunset with an Olympic gold medal. That would be a great story for this team. But when you look at this team, they have been around for a long time. They have won everything. And actually, that's why I felt that overall, it was slightly underwhelming that Spain won this championship when you compare it to Croatia and Norway. Think of the feelings from the players, from the nations, the big relief to get that gold medal. While Spain, they've defended it, they've done it before, they're already looking to the Olympics. Of course they're going to enjoy it. They've been the best team. They deserve it. But that overall feeling is a little bit flatter than, let's say, a parade through Zagreb with hundreds of thousands of people on the street celebrating this huge, momentous occasion for Croatia.
I don't know. I think the second Euro title is still pretty momentous for Spain. And I remember when they won it the first time. And I think when you're backstage with them there, they were going absolutely ballistic. To a certain extent, you're right. When you talk about the Olympics for them is their unconquered mountain, as it were. You know, they've won everything but that. And it was... That's all they were shouting when they were in the dressing room. They were just talking about the Olympics, you know. So it's a bit odd that they were like, we won the Euro. But, like, we're qualified for the Olympics.
But they were so, so devastated 4 years ago when they missed out in that Olympic qualification tournament. They felt like they were screwed over in that tournament. They felt like the world was against them. I don't know if you remember Victor Tomás as well, like, speaking out against it. It was, like, an absolute catastrophe for him. And in the meantime, he's been, like, in the last few years, left out of the national team squad. So I think it's fair to gauge just how much it matters to these players. But it is quite funny, yeah, that they can't... Well, they are enjoying the moment, but already looking forward to 6 months' time because, as it looks like in this squad, it is the final destination for a lot of them.
And how will they handle, if we're talking Spain in the long term? Mm. They're going to probably lose Bjørn Morris, who is 36... And Chariós already announced that he's retiring from handball completely.
Sarmiento?
Sarmiento at 36.
Yeah.
Is probably, he's been there, done that. Aguinagalde, 37. He'll be gone. Guardiola, 35. Probably gone. That is, when you think of the core of this Spanish team over the last decade, it's that golden generation.
That's quite literally their two centre backs and their defensive block and the line player. It is the line through the middle of this team.
It is the heart that has been ripped out. They have won a youth championship recently, and actually with the Spanish league and how it goes, there's always players that are popping up out of nowhere. And this core that's been there for so long may have kept a lot of players out. And we've seen previously players get into the squad quite late. A player like Angel Fernandez Perez, who only arrived on the scene a couple of championships ago. He's 31, but he arrived in his mid-20s into the team, and now he's a crucial part.
Good point.
And there's probably quite a few hidden gems that are floating about the Spanish league ready to take on the world. And we've seen the 5-1 defense come back with a blast, because it has been 6-0. Aggressive 6-0s, kind of dominating world handball for the last couple of years. But 5-1 has been the revelation of this championship. Croatia basically nearly won it with that as their core tactic. Slovenia adopted it amazingly throughout the tournament. Even Spain started this game with a 3-2-1. Mm-hmm. So maybe we see the resurgence of a 5-1, but you need a pretty good number one player there, like Duvnjak, so not many of them around.
I mean, Spain have always performed at the Euros, the whole way through their history. I mean, I think no one has more medals than Spain. So I think they're always going to be there or thereabouts because they don't struggle for talent ever, really. So I think it's good. Definitely going to be very interesting to see what happens. And I think this generation, the lads who are retiring, I think on an international stage have underperformed their whole career up until right now. And now they do the double. So it is a nice ending to that. A gold Olympic medal would just be the cherry on top.
You said there was kind of an underwhelming championship win for Spain, but one man who definitely enjoyed it to the max was Gonzalo Pérez de Vargas. He missed out on the semi-final and the final 2 years ago through injury, so for him it must have been extra special, and that's the first thing I asked him in our post-match interview.
Gonzalo, this time back on the top of the podium, but having been a star and a hero for the team, it must feel a bit sweeter this time around.
Much, much more sweeter than the 2 years ago. At that time, I felt also the championship like mine, but not in the same way as I'm feeling today. I think I needed a championship like this, and I'm really proud of our team, our performance so far in the competition, and for sure, getting the goal and getting the Tokyo passport.
It was a really difficult start to the game. Croatia had your number for the first 15 minutes or so, but that timeout around 18 minutes time really shake things up. You came in first of all, but also you seem to have the solutions in attack and defense.
I think when I changed, we also changed the defense back to 6-0, and I start doing saves from a long range, which helped the defense to feel more confident, to get easy balls to run and score easily. And then we went back in the game. So I think it was a game changer, right?
Sure was. Congratulations. Yeah. Enjoy the gold.
And it was definitely extra special for him because after the game he was in massive tears. I don't know if you saw that. He was on the floor, could barely stand up. That was a very nice moment, I think, after the game. Gonzalo couldn't hold back the tears. Obviously means a lot to him. And of course, he picked up best goalkeeper of the HF Euro 2020. And I think none of us here would disagree.
I don't know. Before the game, before this game, I would have had it 50-50 with Bergerud. But after the final, and I think it is an important point that deciding these players after the final is a way to go. But the fans and the experts from the HF got it right this time. Gonzalo Pérez de Vargas as the goalkeeper. And we'll just go through the rest of the players here quickly and we'll see what you guys thought of the rest of the team. So we had Gonzalo Pérez de Vargas as the best goalkeeper. Magnus Jøndahl from Norway, best left wing. Best left back, Sander Saugesen, also from Norway. Centre back, Igor Karacic from Croatia. Line player, Bence Banhidi from Hungary. Right back, Jorge Maqueda from Spain. Right wing, Blaž Janš from Slovenia. Best defender, Hendrik Pekeler from Germany. And the most valuable player of the entire championship, Domagoj Duvnjak from Croatia, while Sander Saugesen was the top scorer of the competition with 65 goals.
Do you think after that historic performance by Portugal, they'd be thinking, we didn't get even one player on the All-Star team after we came from, oh wow, we qualified to finish in sixth?
But I think their performances were very spread out across the team. They didn't really have a standout star. Quintana was probably their biggest star in this tournament, but he had a lot of competition for that goalkeeper spot. Mm. Rui Silva had ups and downs. He was amazing at his best, but probably not consistent enough. Yeah. And
Antonio Rea on the right wing, another player who could have been among the nominees, or could have been in with a good shot, but he was not the best right wing. And I think that's the point you're trying to make. A lot of these players had very good tournaments, but were they the best player in that position for the whole championship? No.
And they still finished sixth, so yeah. There's obviously five teams of players that had better tournaments. Yeah. But I think more interestingly, we'll go into the inaugural Handball Hour Awards, where we've picked a few categories that we think really define this tournament. And I think we'll have a nice debate about our nominations for these awards and hopefully pick our own all-star team.
Yes, what an all-star team this will be. Okay. All right.
How many positions do we have, Alex?
We have five positions. Five positions.
Just like a handball team.
Just like a handball team. Five all-star positions. Starting with the Loose Cannon Award. The Loose Cannon Award is defined by a player who dominates a team, takes a lot of shots, but maybe doesn't quite get that many of them into the net. So who would your Loose Cannon be?
My nomination has to be Aaron Palmerson. And I think the figures speak for themselves. I'm going to keep it short and sweet. 53 shots, 23 goals, 43%. Aaron Palmerson.
After the first game, you would have thought this is going to be Aaron's tournament. I think he scored 10, was it, against Denmark? I'm pretty sure it was 10 against Denmark. And that was like, okay, here, this is going to be the Aaron Palmerson tournament. And then all of a sudden, things went kind of downhill. Who would your Loose Cannon be, Alex?
A nomination has to be Kim Ekdal-Durie. As sad as that makes me, but I think he probably is below Aaron Palmerson because he was forced into this position of taking the crucial shot for Sweden. There was no one else stepping up. So a lot of the time, he'd be just throwing the ball with the hand up and he'd have to take the shot. Yeah. But he did shoot 41% in the tournament. So even though he was forced, the cannon was quite loose.
Yeah, but I think the point you make there about him being forced and the way the Swedish backcourt was set up, we have to give him a bit of a break there. You know, Aaron Palmerson had a lot of other players around him, young players who in certain games did step up and take over the mantle. But as Brian said, 10 from 17 in the first game against Denmark, which is, you know, below what we're talking, this magic 63% you talked about in a previous podcast. And then after that, 4 from 11, 0 from 3, 3 from 9, 5 from 8, 1 from 2, and 0 from 3.
But I mean, 10 goals against Denmark anyways is a decent...
Take that away. 13 from 36.
Yes. That'll sting. That's going
to
sting.
So are we giving the Loose Cannon Award to Aaron Palmerson?
First Loose Cannon Award goes to a hero.
And with that, we'll never get him on the podcast. There you go. Anyway, we'll have to live with that blow. Next up,
we have the Bruiser. These are usually defensive specialists, but there's a little bit more to being a bruiser. It's the guys that really want to hurt somebody. Who would your nomination be, Brian?
I'd go for Borges from Portugal. I think he's a guy now who takes no prisoners. And Marcio gave me a little bit of insight on him, that he said that when he hits you and he knows it was wrong, he'll never complain about it. But when he hits you and he knows you may have died, he gets really frustrated. So I haven't seen him too frustrated in this tournament, so that's where I'll rest my case with Borges for Portugal.
Okay. Well, Borges was sixth on the list of naughty players, with matches played 8, 1 yellow card and 8 2-minute suspensions. So 17 penalty points. My nomination is joint third on the list, but I think what makes him rise to the top is that he really looks like he wants to hurt people all the time. It's Adrian Tsipras from Hungary. He is. I mean, look, in all honesty, he was what inspired us to make this category. This should be called, maybe for the next championship, it'll be called the Adrian Tsipras Award for Excellence in Brutality. 7 matches played, 5 yellow cards. So that just goes to show that he's the guy you would send out to send a message to the other team when it's early enough not to get a 2-minute suspension. He's going to go and hurt somebody a little bit. 7 2-minute suspensions on top of that, 19 penalty points. And yeah, Sander Sagason dragged to the ground. One, was it, who was it? Was it Bjornsson? When he grabbed the player by the foot from the wing.
I mean, Jesus.
he was out for broken bones. And I rest my case.
I've never seen a guy play with that kind of look on his face before. I was like, is he playing handball here? Or what is he?
you made a great point, Chris. But I have a late comer.
Oh.
To this party. Overall, maybe he's not as much of a bruiser as Shipot, but he has the best bruiser moment of the championship. It was Marko Mamić for his heroic rugby tackle in the semi-final of the World Championship. The worst, best tackle of all time.
It was one of my favourite moments. I thought I was in Twickenham all of a sudden, watching a rugby match. I was like, this is great, wow. Going to get a penalty kick here now. It was one of the strangest things. I've never seen a foul be more celebrated. People loved it. I think probably Sander Sagsen loved it a bit too.
Oh, yeah. Was it enough to win, though?
I think the first Shipot award for brutality must go to Adrian Shipot.
Fair.
Okay.
Up next, Alex?
Up next is our favourite award. The Swiss Army Knife. Mm. This is a player who does everything. He'll be there when you need him.
My Swiss Army Knife has to go to a man. He'll defend. He'll give you the right pass. He might not score every time, but he's going to score a lot. You can send him away on a weekend with your girlfriend and you can trust him. It is the only Christian O'Sullivan. Any protest, Chris?
No, I agree. 100%. He is as safe as houses. And yeah, just a really good player. And he did almost everything right throughout the championship. He played out of his skin in defense as well. He has showed so many good moments. He really punches above his weight in defense. And yeah, he can play on the left-hand side. He can play in the center. He would play anywhere for you.
Yeah.
And one of the saddest moments for me at this championship was having to interview him after the semi-final loss. And that was a real tough moment for him, having to talk to me afterwards, having to talk to anybody right after the game.
Yeah.
It was pretty brutal. And I would give it to Christian, not because of that, but because he's been amazing.
Might be a good signer for Barcelona. Oh, whoops. Aye, aye. Oi, oi. Cheeky.
Another signing for Barcelona is my Swiss Army Knife, and that is Blaž Janš, who really showed up in this tournament. And I think he defines the Swiss Army Knife because as a winger, he scored 20% of his goals from the wing because he does everything else. He fast breaks and he just goes around. He's a right back at heart who kept going around and just putting his body on the line to break through and a lot of time bring Slovenia back into games. And on the other side, he was their focal point in their 5-1 defense. And not only that, he was the real motivator. In the semi-final and in the third and fourth place playoff, he was calling shots. He grew into this leadership position in the Slovenian team. So that's why I think he is the Swiss Army Knife.
You really love 5-1 defense, don't you?
Oh, it's my new thing.
you really want him to be there, but you think more so than O'Sullivan? Or you're just making an argument for Jens?
No, I genuinely think so.
Mm.
Did I win you over?
No.
But as a Swiss Army Knife? No, because Christian O'Sullivan, he defends well. Mm-hmm. But he has one style of handball where he...
He moves
the ball very well.
I'm just thinking, if you were going to put this player into a team, which player would add more to any team? And I think still Christian O'Sullivan might bring more to the table in terms of just what he does in defence as well.
I think he could have been in the nominees for two all-star positions, for the centre-back role and for the defensive, the best defender. I think we've got to go 2-1 here.
And the second last category is, Alex...
It's the butter knife. This is for a player who's an expert at one thing, but otherwise may not contribute significantly like the Swiss Army Knife.
I think there's only one man that came into my mind there when I was thinking about the butter knife, and that was Hungary's Legat Vári. He was a bit of a revelation at this tournament, I think, for a lot of people. And amazing what he was doing in attack, just giving the ball and he'd just jump up and badoosh, giving the ball badoom. And it was incredible, you know, goal after goal. And just giving. I mean, he's the flexibility of a plank of wood in his arm at some times, but it's just an absolute rocket also. And I think he's just a guy who, in my mind, is a definition of the butter knife. Just give him the ball and he might score.
particularly in like the second wave counterattack. That's where he really came into his own. When he had 3 meters to run into, three steps, jump, shoot, everything else, forget about it. But yeah, and he's a good defender as well.
Very good.
Yeah. Fabian Boehm is my choice as the butter knife because he does one thing very well, but nobody really understands what that is and how he does it. And I think that really it gives him claim to fame there because I still don't really understand him. He's big, he's fearless. He scores either with like one step jump shot in the bottom left corner or he falls through the defense and throws the ball into the goal. He goes in one line, he just head first, sometimes ends up head over heels, and just the ball goes in just over more than half of the time. And that is Fabian Boehm for me, and that's why he is my butter knife.
And Alex, last but not least, who's your butter knife?
I have another Hungarian player, and that is Zsolt Balog, who also... He's quite similar to Fabian Boehm, I think, where all he does is attack outside the number two defender. And he's not the most athletic guy. He's not the fastest. He doesn't jump the highest. He doesn't shoot the hardest. But for some reason, when he attacks that number two player, he gets through, scores a goal, even if there's two players hanging off him. Otherwise, his contribution to the team... not very significant, but overall 61% shooting percentage, a good tournament for Zsolt Balog.
I think his timing with those runs is what makes him the butter knife. He's just excellent at the timing those runs between those that one and two.
Looking at the two guys head to head here, thanks to the wonderful HFEuro.com, Zsolt Balog and Fabian Boehm. He gives more assists, he gives more goals, he's slightly more efficient. I mean, Zsolt Balog does take penalties as well and played a little bit more. If I were to be convinced by you in this case, I would say Balog is a good shout, more than Fabian Boehm. But is he a better shout than Patrick Ligotvari? What do you think, Brian? Have you been convinced yet? Or do you want to look at the stats?
I think we need to look at the stats.
Let's look at the stats.
To be honest, I'm convinced by Ligotvari.
Oh, yeah?
Because, as you said, he is the butter knife in its most simple form, where what he does is get the ball at speed in the second wave fast break. And he scored a lot of goals like that. And I don't think he scored that many apart from that.
No. Assists per game one, so wasn't so involved in the actual play, but didn't turn the ball over once.
That's because all he did was run
shoot,
and shoot.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Spread that butter.
Patrick Ligotvari, it is.
And the last category, Alex.
And the last award is the Random Rocket Award. This is a guy who plays the game, he's very involved, does a lot, and out of nowhere, we just get a doosh right into the top corner, and no one's expecting it. And my nomination is actually a little bit maybe different to what some people might think. And he is Dejan Bombats.
Oh.
The rocket is part of his artillery, but I love when he goes up the court, he's dancing around, he does his little spins, he does his little backwards pass, he's looking for the line. I talked to him after his great game where he got 9 goals, 10 assists, and he said himself that he likes assists better than scoring a goal. But sometimes he walks up the court and he's like, I'm sick of this. Stands at 10 meters and just rockets one into the top corner. He's like, mic drop, I'm going back to the defense. So that's why Dejan Bombats is my nomination.
It's a very good shout, and he did make the top 20 of top shots of the championship with 136 kilometers. The very highest was Filip Teleski, 141 kilometers, which was saved But I don't think we're going to include him in that one. What do you think, Brian? Who's your random rocket?
My random rocket is a guy who I think in a lot of people's eyes is a big talent for the Portuguese team, and that would be André Gomes. He's a guy, when you're watching Portugal live, it makes you jump back in your seat a little bit, some of the goals he scored. And I'm just looking here at some of the stats. Took a shot, I think, against Germany, missed it, but it was 139 kilometres an hour.
Joint third highest of the whole championship.
There you go. Yeah, so he was a guy now who made me jump out of my seat a few times with some of the goals he scored. And also a very exciting player, you know. And he's not just an arm. He's going to be one of the future stars of the Portuguese team for sure. So he's my random rocket.
Mine is also Portuguese and plays on the other side, and that's João Ferraz. He made the top 10, joint seventh fastest shot of the championship with 138 kilometres. João Ferraz.
Now, he now fits more into the butter knife category than it.
Oh, I know, but João Ferraz does a lot of things. He doesn't always do these things well, but he does a lot of things.
Right? He tries to do a lot of things.
Like, in fairness to him, he's a good defender.
Yeah.
In
fairness to him, he had a very good tournament overall, but he just had moments where...
He's random, he comes out with random rockets. He does come out. I think the game against Sweden was the perfect example of that one, where he scored four from four at the very beginning of the game, and this was the first Portugal game Alex saw live in person. And I was saying to him at the start, João Ferraz, he's a bit of a liability in attack, because he can be playing 7-on-6 like Portugal do quite often, and he would randomly throw the ball away or just not catch the ball or something like that. But on occasion, he can be absolutely top notch. And looking at his stats overall, 20 goals from 33, 61% is not bad. He had some very, very good games, like that Sweden game, 6 from 8. But the rest of them, and then Germany, 4 from 5. The rest of them were like 50% shooting. But the power he could unleash from such an unlikely source makes him my random rocket.
Are you convinced, Alex?
I'm sticking with Dejan Bombas, because Farage is a shooter. He's built like a shooter. He wants to shoot. It's just that whether he gets to get a shot away is the randomness. Dejan Bombas, he's just a random guy. He's an average-looking dude who can just unleash a weapon.
I've been convinced. I think I'll jump on it on Alex's boat there, and I'll join him with Team Bombas.
I think it's fair. Yeah, let's go for Bombas. Let's give this award in a more positive light to someone who's been really incredible at this championship.
So there it is. Our all-star team is Aaron Palmerson, Lewis Cannon, Adrian Tsipras, Bruiser / Adrian Tsipras Award for Brutality, Swiss Army Knife Christian O'Sullivan, Butter Knife Patrick Ligotfari, and last and definitely not least, the random rocket is Dejan Bombas.
Come on, audience.
Finish up.
I think it's time to finish up this podcast and finish up for the entirety of EHF Euro 2020, at least as far as we can all see each other. I'm pretty sure we'll be back very, very soon as we reminisce on some of the best moments of this championship. But as far as being here in Sweden for EHF Euro 2020, that is it. Throughout the championship, we've got a lot of new listeners, and thank you to all of you who followed it throughout it. And I hope you'll stay with us from now on, because every 2 weeks for the rest of time, as we said at the beginning of the podcast, we will be on with a new episode. We've reached 129 countries during this championship, which is absolutely bizarre. So thank you to all those in Mongolia, Kyrgyzstan, and Lebanon. It's been a blast. Thank you to everyone who has come on the podcast over the last few weeks. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to your podcast, and follow us on social media as well, @HandballHour on Twitter, @Handball_Hour on Instagram. Just search for Handball Hour. You'll find us and you'll find our content. So that's it for now. And as we say in Spain, Brian,
hasta luego.
Get it!